In
Yeah.
this week, on the 16th of September 2017, a Kwasi Appiah's early strike was enough for the Dons to defeat League One promotion favourites Blackburn Rovers 1-0 at Ewood Park. Full marks to Wimbledon because they managed to nick a goal and defend it well for the majority of the game, Rovers boss Tony Mowbray said. With the better in these situations, we became undisciplined in the last 20 minutes and started hitting long balls instead of playing it wide. That is the way to break down a mass defence. Ah, yes. Winning against the odds. It's the Wimbledon way. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Well. Welcome, dear listener, to this podcast. How? What is there to talk about? Let me tell you, it's just all fun and games, isn't it? Whilst the world is burning and being ripped to shreds, this has been a typical Wimbledon week. A brilliant win, then there's been some election shenanigans, on top of which, Sam a man rocked up. What the hell's going on? Anyhow, before we kick on with this, let me do some intros. And today we are joined by mon frère, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you?
I'm all right, Matthew. Good to see you.
And you. And the man with the buttons, our producer, man with knowledge, Dr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you?
I was perfect until Sunday. And then things went kind of strange. So, you know, it was all good. I thought I was going to have the perfect weekend. And
yeah,
then it was
it's
all
been,
weird.
It's weird. It's typically Wimbledon. Yes, so, well, and the other thing to say is, unfortunately, this week we are missing our analyst, our stats man, the guru that is Tall Mark Lewis. He is away working in Switzerland. Neutral territory, which is a good place to be, I feel, at this time, to be honest with you. Hopefully, he's safe in a bunker somewhere. Anyhow, let's start off with the Rotherham win, which was fantastic. Really weird, from my point of view, looking at it, we started really well. I thought we started really well on the front foot, and then the first half got shit. Really fragmented, and really all over the place. Then their number nine, who is now one of my least favourite people, scored a goal, got given loads of space in the box, turned and put the ball in, and then gave it large to the fans, which really pissed me off. But then the second half, it was just like a complete transformation, and I was really pleased for Niall, because I think this is one of the few you've missed a couple of games, Niall, and we've been saying how well we've been playing, and you didn't see any evidence of that in the first half. But the second half, I thought we were immense. Brilliant goal by Reeves. I mean, I've looked back on the wonderful uncovered film and for the penalty, and I can't work out. There must have been a couple of penalties in there. Seems like someone was thrown to the ground, someone was wrestled to the ground. I think we should have had two penalties at that moment. Matty Stevens, who's been on fire, steps up and just puts it away. And then we saw out the game. In actual fact, we could have had one or two more to have made it more comfortable. But and the last 5 minutes, as usual, was a little bit nervy. But we saw it out. Brilliant game. Niall, what was your thoughts coming back and watching us play live?
No, it was good. I went to the Luton game, and then I had the audacity to be on holiday, which is really wrong of me.
But it was,
as you said, The first half was not pleasant. And I was going, I am cursed. I am responsible. And every Wimbledon fan would rightly have said, had we lost the game, that is entirely Niall's fault. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there was a second half that kind of redeemed it all. Also, particularly good that I was there with Amelia, who's off to uni. And this is the game that she was able to catch before disappearing off. So, you know, equally good for her to catch it and to see us get over the line. Nice to see Stevens on form. Reeves' goal, I've looked at it again on you know, the usual as a classic Wimbledon fan, about 873 times on social. And it reminds me slightly of a Paul McGee goal at Highbury, for those of you with a very long memory. That's where that one came through from. But, you know, wonderful, great to see the win. And I do love a Matt Stevens celebration, doesn't everyone?
He's great. I thought it was quite clever because if you look at it, he was quite careful not to hit the flag. He does a little punch on the corner flag. He doesn't hit the Wimbledon logo. He hits below. It's those little details that I like, to be honest with you. But it was great, wasn't it? Adam, what was your thoughts? I mean, obviously, you were sitting behind us. We're hearing a lot of swearing, there's a lot of upset going on. But what's your general takeaway from that game?
There was not a lot of swearing for me, for goodness sake.
No, you don't swear. You don't swear. It's Adam swearing, which is, Adam swearing is beautiful, my friends. If ever you, it's the most beautiful, you know, what the heck, you know.
Exactly.
There's no swearing. It's brilliant.
Might
it's beautiful.
Damn. I'm not sure if we hear a damn. Have we heard a damn? I don't know.
Maybe that's even a damn. You might have had a damn, but yeah.
There's a beautiful probably a good grief in there, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a good grief.
Yeah.
I mean,
never
okay.
anything else more than that. Just for all your listeners, if you wanted to, all of our listener, if you ever want to hear a person who has the most like careful and well-worded and well-mannered behavior,
well-mannered
in the way of not swearing, then Adam Proctor is by far and away top of the tree. There is no one I know that swears less than Adam, and that's because Adam does not swear.
He's a well-mannered angry man.
Thank you. Exactly. Well, first thing I've got to say is, pre-match, I dodged the rain to run to the curry place. I don't know what that one's called, and had
the curry was lovely.
I had a chickpea curry. Was absolutely fantastic, and so I'm going to have that again if they are one of our vans at the next one, because it was fantastic. So I was really pleased about that. Just about got in for the happy hour, which is good. And then the first half was, no fun. I got pretty bored. And the guy whoever scored for them celebrating inappropriately, as far as I'm concerned, in front of our fans, which they're not allowed to do, etc., was annoying. And then, I thought maybe we'll have a sleep second half, because the first half is pretty lame. Second half is great.
I see what I like. I love Tormach. Don't get me wrong, Tormach's great. Had he been here, he would have known the name of that number nine. And the fact that we're just referring to him as that annoying number nine, that makes me a little bit happy. And the other thing I like about Adam's comments there is that he's obviously gone on the classic same old one ball scenario of talking at length and being distracted about the food and drink options, which of course is a favourite topic on this podcast. I too went to the same curry house, but I went for, obviously, not being the vegan, for which Adam takes the credit for being and helping save the planet. I had the butter chicken, which
Me
is
too.
Also pretty good and highly recommended.
Very,
and,
very nice.
Very nice. So well done for, you know, a new potential front runner already in the very, very popular Same Old Wombles Awards for the end of the season. So we'll see. I'll have to try a few other places before I cast my vote, obviously, but it is early days, but there is a front runner.
I've still got two Same Old Wombles Awards from last season, which you've got to give out.
Give to anyone.
Well, no, because my pie have now disappeared off. And Maycock, we need to find him at some point. Anyhow, Adam, you were saying about the...
No, but I also was going to say, in terms of the food thing, I did see that one of our previous food fans or whatever has now got a deal like down the road. So if you can... I can't remember which one it was, but if you can figure it out, you can get quite a good deal on the way into the ground with one of the food things. But, you know, I know people are complaining about the food prices, but I tell you what, the curries were good. Second half was great. Second half I was really excited about. We were doing really good things. I mean, I hated the last 5 minutes plus, because we decided to deploy the stupidest tactic ever, which is basically the shortest short corner where you try and hold the ball into the corner for 7+ minutes, which is always insane.
I think they lasted 20 seconds with that particular tactic, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. It was like, we're not going to last.
Well, I think the problem is, though, that sometimes if you throw a ball into the box, all it takes, and we've had this happen to us before, is a header out, and then someone's...
No, but the thing is...
They
like,
can break quite quickly.
You could still pass.
Whereas if it's a shot...
Yeah, but this wasn't a short corner. It was like a tiny corner. Like,
yeah, that's what happens. That's it.
No,
so you play
pass
and you play for
pass.
Time.
No,
you play for time. No, because you can get tackled. So in that situation, what you can do is get to a place where you can get the ball.
No.
You know, and then it gets kicked off. Then you get a throw in or you get another corner. So it's it's sensible. And the time it takes to then to do that. And even if it goes out for a goal kick, it's taking up a minute of time. So, you know,
I get the concept, Matt. Yeah. The issue with the concept is you have to then execute it and not absolutely, and for the benefit of Adam, F it up.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think, like I say, even in that time, it takes a minute for it to go back. But the point is, Adam's just angry. I mean, and what's your thoughts on Bishop this week?
Well, oh my word. Okay. The guy, you're backing me into a corner, basically. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to.
I don't like his kicking. I don't like his kicking. He does some insane things with his kicking, and I just don't like it. It's just random insanity, and he did the same stuff again that stressed me right out. I don't like it.
I genuinely think before games, you need to go and do a little team talk. Because there needs to be a whole thing about not stressing Adam out. And it involves this. Yeah. We need to score like 5 or 6 goals. And they don't need to get anywhere near our box.
The other thing is, here, we've got an opportunity to get a high-profile sponsor of somebody who deals with stress, one of those drug companies. Yeah. They could be sponsored by that. I can't, you know, the traffic.
Do you know, it'd be perfect. You're right, Nye. The perfect sponsor for us is Valium. Same old Wombles, sponsored by Valium. I think that's our natural sponsor. Anyhow...
If our listener is the MD of Valium or the company that produces Valium, then you know we're open to offers.
Yeah, we really are. We really are horrendously open to offers. So, but anyhow, I mean, like, the whole game, in a weird way, and certainly the first half was kind of disrupted by the fact that it went around, and you, Niall, were there, that Sam Haman had turned up to the ground to get a ticket. So now you were next to him when he was trying to buy a ticket in the reception.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute complete shock. So I'm going into the grounds. I'll pass Bert Dale. It's lovely to see Bert back, by the way. And I see, well, blatantly, I clocked him straight away as Sam Haman. And I've gone to Bert. Fucking Sam Haman. Sorry, Adam, I swore there. But, you know, whatever. And I'm like standing next to him and I go, hello, Sam. And I have a conversation with him. And it's just... For those of you who've read, you know, okay, the comments that are in the book about Sam, it's like he talks about it being his two children and Wimbledon and AFC Wimbledon. And I'm like, they're going, what are you doing here? You know, what? And I, you know, what sort of stuff. And we had the conversation. He said, this is the first time he'd been to Plough Lane, the new Plough Lane. And he was queuing up to get a ticket. So this is just like, you know, I'm like still in an absolute shock. I'm like, and I do say, you know, you should go. I look back on it and there's several things I should have said. I should have said, by the way, get your chequebook out. We want that 30 million, please, or whatever. I did say you should go to the museum, you know, in the corner and stuff like that. And he looked at the museum. And I know he wandered around because I've seen other things and he looked at some other elements afterwards. And it was just an absolute shock, you know, because for me, I've got two memories of Sam Haman. I've got Sam Haman, the person I remember being behind the goal at Plough Lane and being like kind of, you know, the kind of almost the people's champion. But then I've got the Sam Haman that I know that completely stitched over the club, sold the convent on the ground to Safeways, basically condemned Plough Lane, and then try to flog us off to Milton Keynes and all the rest of it. And, you know, loads of other bad shit that was involved that got really, really bad. Where I've got huge credit for what happened on Saturday is the movement and the effectiveness of the Don's Trust board. So the Don's Trust board, for which... As soon as I knew Sam Haman was there, I was like, bloody hell. So I've gone up to the DTB kiosk, flagged it to James Longhurst. James, I know, then flagged it to the people up in the boardroom, which was, you know, Alex Folks and some other people and stuff like that. And they made the decision to deny Sam entry to the ground on the basis that it was not, they couldn't guarantee his safety. And that decision, I think is to be applauded, because the reality is that this could become a bigger issue than it actually was. And it was, you know, for a lot of us who were in that area and saw the same amount, we were like, you know, just all of us in shock. And lots of Wimbledon fans I know that saw that moment. I think Charlie Talbot saw it, and Bert saw it, and obviously people on reception saw it. So lots of people I know. You know, so it was the right decision. I think the club moved really well. I know there were some other people in the boardroom that perhaps had a slightly different opinion about how to deal with Sam Mann, for which I won't go into details of because they're probably not very sensible things. But like, sense or the thing, I think the right decision was to say, Sam Mann, you, for your own personal safety, you cannot come into the ground. I think there is talk about having that conversation at a later point in a private environment, saying, right, well, Sam, if you wanted to come to the ground, what are you, why? You know, having that proper conversation again, like, what does it mean? Because I think for a lot of Wimbledon fans, particularly those who remember the struggle in the 2002 and, you know, everything that happened since probably the Dublin move and all the rest of it, would say there's an awful lot of compensation you'd have to have before you'd feel you'd be safe. And I think that's the words, safe coming into the ground. But it was like, I was absolutely, utterly shocked to be standing next to Sam Mann. I mean, it's because we had problems getting our ticket, but we won't go into that because, well, actually, we will. The club were brilliant at sorting out the ticket issues that we had for Amelia's spare ticket. So I'm standing next to Sam Mann in the ticket queue, and he's behind me. And, you know, I know the club acted really quickly, but like just chatting. And it's like, this is really, really weird. And when I went up and spoke to, you know, Matt and Adam, they were like, what? They could not believe it. And I think so many other people couldn't believe that he would ever be at Plough Lane. It's just so odd.
It's a very
That's
strange,
my
I
kind of
think for
recollection
me,
of it.
yeah, I think the very strange thing about it is that if he's thinking of attending, it should have been a conversation in advance with, you know, with a proper discussion. The fact that he just rocks up to try and get a, to try and get in, I think, because you know, other people, if he'd gone other ways, he might have been able to get into the stadium. He could have easily, I mean, like, you know, what's stopping him buying a ticket online almost, or, you know, using someone else's ticket and getting in. So, you know, but there needs to be a conversation if he's gonna think about doing this. But the and it's a real issue. I mean, he's you know, I've spoken to other, you know, fans about this, and it's and I'm going to use the word dichotomy. It's you know, it's a weird old thing for us because there was this bit, you know, he bought the club when it was on, you know, it was on its heels, you know, he bought the club and invested, and through his early tenure, we went on this amazing run from, you know, Division Four to winning the FA Cup. And then in that time, in that time, he did, you know, and it's arguable that we wouldn't have, that wouldn't have happened without him. So there's some incredible memories for people. But in that time, you know, back in when we were talking to Anne last week, she was there when the, we were mentioning the Crystal Palace protest. You know, the he was thinking about merging us with Palace, so that was the first thing. Then there was, then he was very active in the move to Dublin, which I think he thought was almost done and dusted, and he was selling the club to the Norwegians on the back of the fact that that was going to happen. So and you know, by the time you know, the move up to up the road, he wasn't involved with the club, but he'd initiated it, and obviously buying the convent on the ground and enabling that to become supermarkets and taking us away from Plough Lane and putting us set us apart for a long period of time. So there's lots of things that
I
are
don't think there's a dichotomy. I don't think there is. I think Sam Mann invested in a football club at a point and then was trying from that point on at some point to figure out how to maximize his investment in his investment to get as much money out as possible. And that didn't just include Dublin, it included Belfast. We've since found out that was also a move. The Crystal Palace thing was done in the close season completely inappropriately. We know the Hillsborough disaster caused
was
us
an
so many
opportunity. That was
problems
that,
and
and that
so
was
many
an
problems
opportunity for
and yeah
him. Yeah.
and I and I don't think he did us any favours with what turned out to the Milton Keynes. So I don't. What I found so weird about it was that, and like Niall says, you know, it kind of disrupted the first 10, 15 minutes of the game anyway. So if there was a good part at the beginning of the first half, I wasn't paying enough attention to only see the bad part. It's just so weird.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that stage, Adam, as you know, I was getting updates on what was happening with Sam and Matt and what the deal was and where we were doing throughout that first bit. And I was still in absolute shock. Going back to when I look at it and look at, because obviously doing the fair game stuff, I've seen a lot of parallels of what's happened. So the people that invest money in football clubs, and the numbers have now gone through the roof about how much you invest. But the concept is that you invest in a football club, it goes up the pyramid and you flog at a higher price.
Yeah.
Right.
Wrexham are going to do. That is exactly what Wrexham owners are going to do. They are going to sell out as much as they can. As soon as they get the Premier League, I guarantee the Wrexham owners will sell out.
See, they're now, Wrexham's a club now. Is it, to be honest, Adam, that's not the best example. There are plenty of other examples like Derby, Villa or whatever. There's lots of examples where they've tried to do that and it goes wrong. Where Wrexham are, like, I mean, there are lots of things I don't agree with what Wrexham are doing. Wrexham's investment is into the infrastructure of the club. So they've basically rebuilding this stadium. They've done loads of stuff in the community development. So there's lots of stuff that means Wrexham are like to become more sustainable longer term. Right? So they're doing stuff. Sandman didn't really ever do any of that. So there was no kind of like massive investment into Plough Lane or, you know, whatever. No. So that never happened. So there was never a point like when Sandman was trying to flog a higher league place. That's what he was trying to do. That was his tactic. And that, when it goes wrong, is horrendous. And we kind of got caught at the end of it, you know. But I still came back to it.
I think that's Wrexham's owner's tactic. I just think they're just being a little bit more canny about their tactic.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes.
But I think the thing is...
in a better place than it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. And whereas Sam did not. That's the thing. Sam didn't. He, as you say, Adam, he was looking to. I mean, the stupidness of it is that actually, if he'd had hanging around a little bit longer, he'd have made a lot more money on the development, because, you know, it was, what was it, 20 million, I think he sold the site for, where it would have been worth five times that if he'd have held on a little bit longer. So he's, but yeah, it was all about that. At the time, I think it was an opportunist purchase, because the story is, isn't it, that he was in the back of someone's cabin. He said that, so saying he was looking to buy Chelsea, and then someone gets well wanted by Wimbledon, and so he bought Wimbledon for peanuts. And at that point, it was just a thing on the side. But you know, it became successful. So at that point, ever since when it started to get more and more successful, he was trying to sell the club. He was trying to get a way out of it.
I guess the question is then, why do we think he came on Saturday? Because I have no idea why he came on Saturday.
You've got to think about the mindset of Sam and Man.
Yeah.
And the mindset of Sam and Man is a bit like he sees us and that motley bunch up the road as his children, right?
I think he does.
It's an interesting one, because you could draw, you know, I won't draw parallels, but like the way that mindset is not the way that Wimbledon is now. You know, we do not belong to one person. We belong to a wider fan base. And it is, what's happened with us is that what should be the situation at every football club has now come to pass at Wimbledon, because we are the owners of the football club. But you could argue that every football club should be the custodians of it, are the fans. Right. And that should always be the case. And that's, I think, and it comes on to the DTB stuff, right? Anyone in the DTB should be right. What makes us special and what makes our journey special is we are not Sam and Man or somebody else's little children. We are not that. We are a club that has done that. So this should never be a kind of one personality or one person that owns or is in control of how the club operates. That should never be the case. So it should always be about, you know, putting the fans first, thinking of it as a collective, thinking of it as a group of people that are working together to break the mould, and that we're stronger together than we are, like, having one little kind of person in control of it. And I think that's the message. That's the lesson that we should never forget. And that was the lesson that we had under Sackman.
Ultimately, what's happened is, I mean, he ultimately he refers to us as as his children, and he treated his children disgustingly because there was no consultation, there was no talking to us. It was, you know, a sort of like you know,
Yeah, I mean,
goodness.
the Palace move was in the last day of the season, wasn't it? That
Yeah,
Jansen, the programme,
the
was
yeah, you
given
know.
no chance to do anything.
Well, the Palace, no, the Palace move, the muted merger with Palace. Oh yes, so the muted merger with Palace happened during the season. The actual move to Selhurst Park,
It was the last game of the season.
that happened in the in our last on the last game of the season, and there was nothing we could do about it. It was all signed and sealed. So
Yeah. And
that was,
ironically against Crystal Palace.
yeah. I mean, and it was that was yeah. So. And then he kept us there. And then there was all this sort of like talk of we'll find this site. Or, and it was always someone
I mean,
else's fault. Always someone
there's
else's fault.
this.
And he knew it. He knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly
Yeah,
what he was
that's
doing.
really good. So, like Lawrence Lowne, I think his father, they were looking at grounds with Salmon before then and around that and stuff. And you know, Salmon Man was shambolic in those conversations about potential other sites. You know, I mean, it's that is a kind of an almost a known fact, and it's just. I mean, we could talk about it. There's lots more other things we need to talk about, but
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
Salmon Man was just like,
It was
blew my mind, blew my mind.
ultimately, he was a, he shouldn't be near our club. And if he's gonna make, if he wants to try and watch a game, he's got to go through the right channels. He's got to talk to the DTB first, got to explain his situation, and then, you know,
I
give us a
just
check
think
for
it's
30 million
so
quid.
weird. It's still
Yeah.
weirding me out. I don't understand. Like, I
Yeah.
just don't understand.
But that's what he was like. He's like that, and he I don't know. It's very very peculiar, very peculiar. I don't know what he was thinking. If he suddenly thought he was going to get some sort of weird hero welcome, which he's never going to get because he doesn't read the room well. He just doesn't. He's ridiculous. Anyhow,
Just by the
bizarre.
say, because we're recording this live, we're in that thing that we never
Oh.
really care about. We did concede a penalty, but we're now back in front.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there.
That's right. Well, by the time this goes out now, this will be irrelevant. So anyhow, Salmon Man. But the big—I mean—you'd have thought the win would be the big news that's keeping us going through this week. How fantastic that win was against Rotherham. That would have been the thing. Or the other thing that would have kept us going through the week would have been the fact that Salmon Man's tried to sneak into our ground. Fucking hell. You'd have thought that would have kept us going in terms of conversation. But no, the thing which is keeping us going is the fact that we've got the DTB elections going on. And so over the weekend, what has happened, and honestly, I've kind of losing track of it, but as far as I can work out, we've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people who are going to go for the DTB. There are 5 spots that are available. Is this right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And initially, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people standing. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. And of those 8, Ian Hicks is no longer running. Simon Hood has resigned from the board. He's on the board, but he's still running in the election. Matt Thornett was put in an app was put in a nomination, but now is withdrawn. And there was someone else who's withdrawn as well, or someone else has stood down from the board. Is that right, Ian?
Robinson.
Ian Robertson. So that's what's happened now. So the 5 people that are left standing are Chris Atkinson, James Ledward, Alex Folkes, Martin Drake, Sam Spencer, and Simon Hood, who
That's
has resigned from the
six
board,
people left
but
standing.
still, yes,
And
who
six because of
signed,
Simon Hood.
yeah. So yeah, because so Simon Hood, who's standing but has resigned from the board at the moment.
Correct. So
So
we've got
that
six
is
people
that.
still
So what's got?
standing, and there's
Yep.
five
Yes.
places in the election. But we had
Yes.
Ian Robinson come off the board, which technically means there is a sixth place. But because the election has already started, That can't be a place that necessarily can be taken up by the six people standing. So we still have a contested election in theory.
Yeah. By five places that are there, although there are six people standing, and then in theory there are six places on the board.
Correct.
You confused? You will be after the Same Old Bubbles podcast.
I'm at with this, just on a quick one.
Yeah.
I think the sixth place should be co-opted, because that's an awful lot of white men. And I'm kind of going, right, let's have a bit of diversity on the board. So I think the sixth person should be a co-opted woman.
But we have to, okay.
I
don't disagree with that, Niall. And I don't think the sixth person should be picked as in the sixth person in the nominations by the fact they go, oh, they were in the running. But obviously, I think what we need to discuss is what has caused this domino effect of changes, etc.
I mean, this is where again, it's like, you know, I mean, it's really difficult. Like for, I kind of get with Simon Hood, he's out a little bit, but the guy does live in Liverpool. You know, he's not, as far as I understand, he's not that much. Kiosk or well, boardroom duty.
He's been voted on. Yes, he's been voted on. People know at the time he was in Liverpool. People know that, and he's a diehard woman effect.
But also, let's rewind back to the very start of all of this, because I think that is important. Right, we were waiting for the manifestos to come out, right?
Yeah.
And we understood they were going to come out on a specific day, and we're on one of our I'm sure we're all on various WhatsApp things with various different groups of fans, etc. And we're all like, where's the manifestos? What time are they coming? And I'm like, oh, it's probably midday. You know, it's the day of the thing. And then someone else suggested, oh, I think it's the evening. And by the time a sensible evening had happened, we had no manifestos. And we're like, where's the manifestos? And so I went to bed quite late. But there were still no manifestos on the day that we were advised by the election steering group, the Don's Trust, that we would get manifestos. And we didn't see them till the next day. And
I love this, Adam. Can I just say, my beautiful thing is the fact that you stayed up as late as you possibly could for the manifestos. It's brilliant. That was like, this is Adam's Christmas present. It's like he's waiting for Santa. He's been let down, to be honest with you, by the ECG.
No, I literally was waiting to get them. I wanted to read them as soon as they came out. And I was just okay.
Just for the benefits to our listener, but in real time, it's actually 3-1, by the way. Not that we care.
Let Adam finish.
That's fine. So I went to bed thinking, why haven't we got the manifestos? Didn't know why. There was no explanation. And then the next day, we got the manifestos. And we heard from other areas that an individual, who I don't know who this person is, but they go by the name of Sean B on various things, had been denied, wasn't allowed to run in this year's election. And it turned out to be the same person that didn't run in last year's election because of various mistakes that were made by the Don's Trust board, because they originally spelt the website, the email address wrong on the website. And then he also then mistyped the... Anyway, I think we can remember that. It was a mistake on numerous stages. I was on the running last year. Didn't get anywhere, obviously. And that seems to have triggered a bunch of things after that point, because this individual was not allowed to be in the running, and that's what's triggered the resignation of various others, it seems. From what I understand.
And so our understanding is, and maybe someone could look this up whilst we're doing this. We should have, I apologise, dear listener, we should have this in front of us. But he was apparently blocked from standing due to Rule 10. Our understanding is, no one's entirely sure when Rule 10 came in, but there was a lot of mediation to try and make it work. And I think there was Sean might have been of the belief that, you know, he was going to be able to stand because of the mediation, but it didn't happen. And so because of being in breach of Rule 10, this mysterious rule. He's not saying it.
We don't know exactly what we can't find exactly what Rule 10 is. I think people are still trying to find out when it was enacted, but it's something to do with the fact that you've been bringing the board into disrepute. And it sounds like Sean had done a number of things that were considered libelous, etc., and was working to kind of sort that out. And from what I understand from Ian Robinson's resignation letter, was that he felt that Sean had been doing all the right things and was surprised at the decision of the election steering group, who then recommended that Sean couldn't stand to the Don's Trust board, and the Don's Trust board, not to a majority, but not to a unanimous vote, agreed with the election steering group. And that's kind of seems to have kicked off the various bits and pieces. And the people that resigned was after that point. But I also understand that those members of the Don's Trust board who were up for re-election were not involved with approving the election steering group's recommendation that this person couldn't stand.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've been conflicts, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it'd been a conflict of interest.
To say, right, you're not. So what, I mean, I've heard so many rumours about all of this, and, you know, going from what you've just said, I mean, I think there's more to it than that, from what I've heard from many, many different sources. And it, you know, it wouldn't surprise me.
I have less sources than Niall, so.
Yeah, no, but I mean, this is what I've heard from different people. And it's just like, I think there's more to it than that. I think we're going to have to probably leave it at that position. But I think, you know, people have been more than likely to have ideas about other conspiracies and other things, and whether it was coordinated and the rest of it. And I think that's up to other people to have those conversations. I've heard the rumours. I'm sure other people have heard the rumours. I'm not going to go into the details here, largely because I don't want to make Adam's like really like hell on earth. But that's kind of where I'm at. And I'll go back to Simon Hood. And Simon Hood, you're right, I know he's a person who's a dedicated Wimbledon fan, but I can also see the difficulties it is to be able to take part as actively as you can do when you're not that close. And having been on the board twice, and the first time it was actually quite difficult because we used to have all the meetings at King's Meadow and they used to go on until 1 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't live near King's Meadow. So when you have issues with logistics, it puts a strain on what is quite a demanding role.
And
so
I think this is where I think it needs. I mean, in my mind, we've spoken about this a trillion times. It needs reform, and totally all the meetings should be hybrid. If you can get there in person, that's brilliant. If you have to be online, I mean, we all have meetings all the time. I have meetings all the time where, you know, I'm on camera and there's people in the room. You know, it's the way it is. My voice is still valid. My voice is still being heard as it should be. But with me, like, there are certain duties that maybe have to be, you know, that people who don't live near the ground or don't live in the area could say that there's a commitment of X number of times a year that they will be there. So that's one thing. But also the other thing in terms of the election, then my sense is, and I genuinely, Adam, you can help me out here, because I've genuinely lost track of how many board members we're meant to have. How many members are we meant to have?
No, I think it must be 11 or something, but we need...
But you're there. This is a thing. So I genuinely, and because over the course of the last year we've had people turned down and then people being co-opted on and having empty spaces and not needing to fill all the spaces, I haven't got a clue. So I genuinely feel that we need to reorganize the board. It needs to be five places that are co-opted on, that are set aside for particular people. So it should. I feel that Merton Council should have a place on the board. Wish should have something on the board, and they don't have to be the same person. They could be a rep who changes from place to place. DLAG, the foundation. These people should be these people that be and WOSA, the women's support.
That's a bit about PLC versus.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got an issue with charity board though, Matt.
Yeah,
so people gonna, are on. A, yes. there's a whole charity governance issue there. Where I go with on the board makeup is I am much more in favour of particular positions being voted for. So
But
what your
they're
role
not
of
gonna
it
but
is.
there's not
So
they're not
like,
gonna
you know,
be people aren't
you should
standing,
have to
people
show
aren't
people.
standing for it. People
You
aren't
should
standing
have
for it.
people,
They're not gonna
but you
stand,
need to have
no.
people with those specialities. But I would say you need to have, there needs to be a kind of element about diversity. There needs to be, I would definitely go, there should be a comms specialist, there should be a legal specialist. This is what Exeter do. And I think that Exeter model of having specialist roles set aside and generalists as two different bits, that's what I think you should need to have. Because I think that skill set, and I think the board at the moment are not a bad makeup, you know, but that's where I think we need to go if we want to just professionalize ourselves just that little bit more.
But
But I
and
have to
I
go on
agree, I
this,
agree. No, I agree, but
quickly.
people aren't standing.
Exactly. That,
I mean,
so the
the
other
other
thing.
thing I would
So
say,
how
yeah,
do
it's
you
true.
do how do you do that
Would you be, Matt, you
and
say
fill up
people
those
aren't
roles?
standing. People aren't standing, but like we still technically have a contested election. When we've seen big
Oh, come
contested
on.
elections, it's when the clubs, but when we've been in crisis, right?
Yeah, but I mean
So
this
yes, there's an
time
element
we're
about pushing for it. There's
Yeah,
an
but
element about
they
need to push for it, and I'll totally go with it. But at the same time, you know, I don't think there's a necessarily a something wrong about co-opting experts onto the board if we're sure, right? But I do, you know, I think we need to.
I'm just, what I'm saying,
Sorry, Gavin, go on.
no, but I'm just saying, of it, as a, effectively a charity in various bits and pieces or co-op, or whatever, we have to have a certain number of people to be able to sign certain things off at AGMs, etc. Right? So you can't vote things through if you don't have enough board members. So we understand that we've got to co-op people on to ensure we have enough, and I can't remember what the number is, but we need a certain amount of people to be able to push through changes, to make decisions, to even sign off the minutes of the year's meetings. You have to have an agreement of a certain percentage. Yeah, exactly. So
I
we
think the
are
number of
continuing to
board
run the
members that we need to have
risk.
at any one time, the number of board members we need to have at any one time, I'm pretty sure is nine, but we've gone more, we've gone above that deliberately because of
Yeah, to make
resignations when
sure
we've
that
done
we
that
don't
before.
get a position. Yeah, to make sure we don't get into a position where we can't sign off the minutes of the last year's whatever accounts, etc. That we can't agree that the fire escape is at the back of the whatever building. You know, there is certain things that we have to do. So I don't disagree we shouldn't be. I don't disagree we shouldn't be co-opting people. I don't disagree that we shouldn't be getting people in. But we need enough people to actually manage things. Otherwise, we will get to a point where we can't actually even sign off what we're doing,
And I mean,
and we're
and
not
I
getting anyone.
think,
Matt said the same thing. We're not getting enough people standing. And then what happens was we just about get enough people standing, and some like one thing changes, and everything seems to fall apart. So I guess we could discuss about the logistics of what's happened, right? And everyone, if they read through the tweets and whatever, if or wherever they see them, could probably figure out what has occurred. But I think for us on this podcast is like, why has this occurred? We've had one person who was not allowed to stand, and that appears to have triggered the resignations of numbers of people who are on the Don's Trust board, has clearly upset people who were vying for election. They've decided no longer to run, and I don't buy into the narrative that it's a closed shop, that people are doing things as a clique. Well, I don't buy into that narrative. But why, when we get to
No,
election, that this all breaks apart?
I mean, I think we've got one issue. I think is that you have this is politics at the moment, Adam, and I think that one thing is that we've got the board members who are on at the moment were voted on by the membership, so that was it, and that's however many people voted. What that is what we have. So the people on the board are the people that they got the most amount of votes. It was a democratic process. People got voted on. Now there are some people who probably don't like the structure of the board or the people on the board for whatever reason. They don't like them, but they were voted on there democratically. Now, what you can do, and it feels slightly like this, is disrupt the election process, and so you get this disruption going on. Then people going, well, I don't I didn't get a, I didn't. Get to vote for the sort of thing I'd like to vote for because there was no one with my opinion on standing on the DTB. But the probably the truth of the matter is that We're going to go through the process. We're going to have those five people elected on, and then we move on. And that is probably what will happen. There'll be rumblings, and then there'll be some sort of thing. But the truth is, though, if you want to get a different voice on there, at the moment, unfortunately, we're not into coups necessarily. So you have to stand in the election, put your case out there, and hopefully you might get on. And I'm all for different voices. And I think it's different. I think I can understand it's difficult if you're one lone voice in amongst a whole lot of people who are thinking in a particular way. But that's democracy. That's how it works. But it's tricky. And I think the other thing which has been a real problem, and this is a DTB thing, is that I can't see anywhere there's not been a statement or anything about what's gone on. So what we really do need is a statement from the DTB that outlines it. Now, they probably want to protect, they've probably got their own opinions, and there's probably a lot of things which they're quite angry about. So they have to pull together a statement which is diplomatic and correctly worded. But that should have been out. And my sense was that they were meeting on Monday night, which is last night as we're recording this.
I thought
this.
We'd see something today. So I was surprised. I thought by our podcast, we might have had a statement that we could refer to.
We know how it works, Adam. The way it works is that we record our podcast. As soon as we've stopped recording it, the statement comes out. That's exactly what it is. And then other people can talk about it.
What happens is we suggest that they should make a statement. They listen to our podcast. They learn. And they do, and they act on the advice of the same old Wombles podcast.
That's what happens. That's what happened recently. We were saying that people are standing. Mm. There should be someone from the DTB to talk to, and it happened.
Excellent words. My Monfrere Matthew and Dr. Adam Proctor as the two people, the voice of reason that you both are, yeah. Whereas I'm the voice of like whatever. The voice of reason, DTB board, listen to these two, and act. Appropriate.
And it needs to happen. I mean, we don't want to be banging on about it. But you know, the thing is, if there was a concerted effort to disrupt this election, and I really hope there wasn't. I don't think people are malicious like that at all. I think that would be silly.
Gosh, too many rumours, Matt. Too many things I've heard.
I wish
it wasn't the case. But I've heard.
The truth is probably a statement will come out that says we will carry on having these elections. So five of these six people are going to get a place, and then you know then the you know it stops for now, and then there are going to be you know like there's going to be opportunities because there's going to be SGMs, going to be you know AGMs, whatever it means. There are going to be meetings throughout the year where you know people are going to have a go against the board.
I think there's been a bit of a domino effect in terms of who's resigned, stepped up and stopped being in, which I actually think is really unfortunate. I don't quite understand why you would step away from trying to be elected to effect change if you think change is required. That also, I find that quite strange. So I don't think people are working together in some sort of conspiracy. I think there's just been a little bit of a domino effect, which there can be for these things where people think,
yeah,
I'm going to stand on this side, and they've made a choice to by stepping out of the election or resigning, and that is disappointing actually. Yeah. I can understand the resigning while you're in the election process, because you may well have been told you're on the board. Even though you're up for election, you have to, you know, work in a particular way. You're not independent in that sense. So I get that. But I honestly don't get stepping away from asking to be elected if you want to affect change. That doesn't.
Well, I mean, So anyhow, the thing about this is, I'd just like to put a thing out there to Amazon, Disney, Netflix. You know, there's conversations about it being a series. This is it. This is some of the drama. You're not going to get this sort of drama with your Wrexhams or your Sunderlands or whoever it is. This is unique to AFC Wimbledon. This is a unique thing. Get on board. And whilst we're at it, where is episode 3? Where's episode 3? We've had episodes 1 and 2 Where's episode three? And where's our sign?
I'm pretty confident I know what is going on with episode three. They are obviously spending quite a lot of time figuring out which actor to get for me, and it's taking quite a lot of, you know.
And it's at this point that we have to end our podcast today.
Matt, there's one other thing that we've not mentioned, which was a certain index that came
out. Oh, bloody hell.
Well, it's not our fault that the other news took over the fact that there was an amazing football index, which proved five clubs to be regulated already. We knew we weren't going to get to talk about it because it all blew up, which is like the most amazing thing. Sorry, Niall. But I think...
Yeah, right, okay, just saying it out there. 22,000 data points, 15 researchers, four months worth of work.
You're right, Niall.
All independent, not done by me. None of the researchers are AFC Wimbledon fans. None of the details were like AFC Wimbledon fans. The data points were developed by like experts in things like environment, equality, finance, governance. They are the leading experts. So this is like the most comprehensive survey of English football ever conducted. And what it shows is that there were, out of 164 clubs that were put under the spotlight, all the clubs down to National League North and South, only five are actually regulatory ready. That means they are past the financial sustainability, have good governance processes in, do good things in environment, fan engagement. You have to pass a minimum standard in those four core areas before you could even get gold. Only five clubs got them. And they were Brighton, Carlisle, Cambridge United, Bath City, and a certain club that resides in the mighty Plough Lane. Yes, us. AFC Wimbledon, one of only five clubs to make it. So that says that clearly the work that was put in on the board about 3 years ago has come to fruition.
All right. And who was on the board 3 years ago, Niall?
I'm going to go one other thing. On that board that was there 3 years ago, there's a certain Xavier Wiggins, and I want to give a big credit to Xavier, doing his 92 walk. He's just past the 46-day mark. He's up going around loads of clubs, I think, in Manchester at the moment. Yeah, big up, Zav. I know you listen to this. I know you listen to all the podcasts as you walk in. But, Zav, keep going, mate. We're there with you. I think it's brilliant. I keep looking at it and going, like, I'd love to know where the rest of the route is, because it would be cool if a bunch of Wimbledon fans were able to join him, at least in one of the last legs or whatever, if it comes back to London. But, Zav, you know, well up for you. Well up for highlighting all the good things that football can do throughout the whole of the country. Zav, well done, mate.
He says he's done... his last tweet was Saddleworth Moor, and a walk to Manchester. It was so windy and wet, it was funny. The poor picture of him being interviewed here, he looks absolutely drenched. The guy's a legend. It got to the Etihad destroyed. But it's great for him from the City of Manchester, what they were doing there. 17,000 young people being supported on their pathways, which is brilliant. So there's great things here. Zav talking to all the wonderful people that he's met. And I think there's pretty stuff here as well. Amazon, Disney, Netflix. This is something you should be looking at as well, because, you know, like... This guy's a legend. He's 92, but poor guy. He just looks absolutely drenched in this picture. He's done amazing work.
I hate to imagine the state of his feet at the end of this. Oh, yeah. He's doing like on an average like over 20 miles a day or something, which is just ridiculous. For those of you, none of us would not. I wouldn't want to do 20 miles in one day, let alone 92 consecutive days.
He's done absolutely brilliantly. But Nye, listen. We're just going to roll on. This is going to be one of our longest podcasts ever. No one sleeps. Because I really wanted to talk about the index, which is fantastic. So, is there anywhere where people can see are people categorized? Are clubs categorized now by gold, silver, and bronze?
Yeah. So we moved away from a whole league table to look at kind of really highlighting the top end. So there are out of the 164, five got gold, nine got silver, and 13 got bronze. So it's pretty exclusive club. What was clear from it was that the wealth in the game means that there are a lot of Premier League clubs amongst those 27 clubs who got awards. But What was interesting is the amount of Premier League clubs that actually have enough reserves to last 3 months, which is the kind of minimum recommended, was 5% of the
Wow.
Premier League clubs. So Premier League clubs is are not, I think it might have been one, are not financially secure going forward. So they're actually at risk. If the owner was to walk away, then a whole bunch of clubs, if there weren't people jumping in to buy them, they're not run in a very financially sustainable way. Fan engagement in the Premier League isn't as high as it could be, largely because they're all about international fans. It's not really that important to meet as closely with some of the other clubs. So that was quite noticeable. But also, there were significant financial cliff edges emerging. So yeah, everybody knows about the Premier League to the Championship, but the next biggest one, or the biggest one actually, was between the Championship and League One. So there is a real big concern that the financial flow within football is a mess, because that's what's causing a lot of clubs to not do well. And that needs to be addressed. And the other issue on governance side is the National League, which, because it doesn't have any kind of anywhere near the same level of reporting structures and scrutiny as the Premier League and the EFL, it scores appallingly on governance. For Adam's benefit, we did stuff on ethics and environment. Environmental scores are shocking across the board. So, nobody scores particularly well on environment. There's about only a couple of clubs that actually get above 50% in marks. Ethics is pretty shocking. Of the Premier League, 19 clubs had sponsors, had an alcohol and a tobacco sponsor. Sorry, an alcohol and a betting sponsor. So 19 out of the 20, say 19 had both of those. So, that's where you're at. And that ethical sponsorship drops off quite dramatically once you go out of the Premier League, but it tells you a bit about where the Premier League are willing to take their money. Because it's, that's a very, very, very significant, it's a really strong message to society that betting's okay. Because that's what you're seeing in the Premier League. And, you only have to look at Gambling for Lives or the kind of experiences of people like Merson and so many other people. And we're not immune to it, as we know our own club.
And
So,
like, so can we on that, you can go to the Fair Game and you can see the categories. You can see who's in the
yeah. So if you
gold,
go to
who's
the
in the
Fair Game
silver, who's the
website,
bronze.
fairgameuk.org, at the top tab there is a bit saying Fair Game Index. Click on that, and you'll be
And
able
you
to
can
get
see.
and download the
So that,
full 56-page report with all the details and all of that.
and then there's a whole load of clubs. So what is it? There's how many clubs are gold, silver, bronze all together?
27
27.
are
So
gold,
then
silver, bronze.
there's over 100 then include your index who are not in that, who have not got anywhere near that.
177 clubs are not even close to being regulatory ready.
Yeah. Is there any clubs in Buckinghamshire who are not regular, who are not,
The club that you may be referring to are not within that 27 top
they're
group.
not within that. What a surprise. Excellent. Well, that's, I mean, yet again, it's brilliant night. It's great work. It's absolutely fantastic work. And so
I've got
hopefully,
really,
and this
really,
will, will
really,
this
really
go with
stressed.
this go with will this go to the football regulator, and the sort of is the football regulator taking this on board? Is it,
Yeah, so
so
we've
how
had
does it, how
conversation
does
with
it,
the
how,
regulator.
yeah.
So we're having a conversation with the regulator about what our findings are. I have a kind of a regular catch up with the shadow regulator one to one, and then also with the team to discuss our findings and the research we're doing. So we're feeding into that a lot. We're currently working on a new owners and directors test model and a new financial flow model that we'll be feeding in. I had a meeting today with the Premier League, talking about a whole load of things as well about what our views and concerns are. And there was actually some common ground, which is useful. So we're looking to try and get to a position of decent consensus that will help strengthen the game overall. And that's all based on this like huge amount of research, which I will stress is done by people very much independent of me. It's not, and they're the ones who have built this data set. So it is really, really robust, really thorough. And it doesn't take 4 months for no reason.
No, okay, so I was going to ask a couple of things, right? Firstly, Niall, you obviously have reiterated you're completely independent. I'm pretty sure that many of the people involved in this are fans of other clubs. So I suspect everyone is independent. It just happened you're leading the charge in this, which is fantastic. And I'm obviously a big fan, as you know. One of the quite. And I know we could talk about this for ages and people might be zoning off because they're like, well, I mean, we're talking about the regulator again. But one of the things that I mean, I'm a big fan of all of this, but one of the things that recently came up was that the regulator obviously has a certain amount of budget to enact and do things, right? And that other clubs may have bigger budgets. And so when they are then, presented by the regulator that they need to make change, the clubs with all the money will use their money to basically exhaust any funds the regulator has to stop them from doing things. And I didn't have an answer for that, and I wondered whether you could maybe talk a bit about what how does that function, because I don't know.
So that's a really good question because there's two elements to that. On the actual day-to-day running of the regulator, so that will be set on, there'll be a levy to football clubs that they'll pay to the regulator to for that regulation to come into place. Now, clubs are already having to do a number of different bits of reporting. So the regulator is basically consolidating a lot of that. So that it's, for clubs in the top four divisions, there will be a bit of extra reporting, but it won't be as massive as some people think. The regulator has also made it very, very, very clear that where clubs need support for it, there will be support provided centrally, which is very important about making sure that, particularly lower down the pyramid, that you're not losing certain amounts of time. And I've had a conversation yesterday with one club who was saying that they thought the amount of levels of reporting and auditing they need to do. He pulled a figure out the age, said, oh, I could do with six full-time members of staff to cover. I know he's joking, but that burden needs to be dealt with by the regulator. In terms of making sure that you don't get tied in knots, this is the bit where several legal experts and reaching a kind of consensus with some elements of it are absolutely fundamental. So a bit of the conversation I've been having is about the owners and directors test and the governance test to make sure that that is properly agreed upon by the various different people. And I actually think there's quite a strong likelihood there will be agreement on that. So a lot of that's about transparency, that nobody actually knows what the owners and directors test actually is, and making sure that it's as clear as possible and that people coming into buy a football club know exactly what hoops and loops they need to jump through. So there are elements that I think will just be tidying up, making the game more clear, less open to the accusation of smokes and mirrors, and that's the thing I think people would want, and that's one thing that we're working really closely with, and to make sure that we have a proper system in place.
No, because we could talk about this for forever, and Adam, you could ask loads of questions about it, but honestly, this is we've come into the end. And can I just ask now? I'm assuming you're going to do a podcast on this with Fair Game because Fair Game have various different. They have a podcast themselves. Am I right?
We do have a podcast ourselves, yeah, and we'll be looking to do one. Admittedly, our next one's probably on Black History Month, but we will be doing, I know it's a tight October, but we will be looking to do one on this as well.
And you yourself have been interviewed again on, have you been on TalkSport recently?
It's me and Simon Jordan, yeah. You can go back and listen to that. Some of it was clipped on apparently on Channel 4, but yeah. So yes, I've been on various on LBC, Radio London, all the kind of usual malarkey talking about it all. But if you feel so obliged, you could go back and listen to some of that.
There are links that we can put on here that will guide people to that, because I think this is it's really important. I guess the big question is, it's great that we as someone enough are in that gold category, one of five, and we are regulator ready. Is there what's the implication for us? Is there, I mean, apart from
This
being
is this
brilliant, apart
is
from it being brilliant, what is the
this is one of
implication
the
for the club?
things that we are trying to work on, and we're in the process of writing to about 35 clubs that we've identified talking about the issue of the new financial flow needs to look at rewarding well-run clubs, because otherwise you're going to there's very little incentive to be well-run. We do it because of our history and because of where we've been through and the kind of our own experience, and we know that we don't want to ever be put at risk, right? So, and there's still risks for us as a club.
So
We need to be
basically,
in a
what we want to
situation
do, we want to link your index to parachute payments. If the parachute payments were all reversed, this links to it. So if you're in the gold, silver, or bronze, like you are going to be financially rewarded for being that. That is the thing, which would mean that all those other clubs who aren't like that are not going to get that sort of like financial reward.
Well, what we're looking at is a base funding for clubs in every division so that they can actually budget effectively for knowing what they're going to get. And you basically are getting a reward for being well run that comes on top of it. So
On top
you
of it,
have a
perfect.
base slice, and then you have the kind of like well done reward. That's the kind of conversation that we're having with a whole range of stakeholders that have got significant influence in what that financial flow will look like. And that's the kind of debate that we're trying to do. So it's fascinating. I think we will get, we'll see. We'll see. But that's the
Well,
debate we're having now.
that would be amazing. So that would be fantastic. A base level and then a sort of like, a well-run sustainability on top of that.
Yeah,
It's
that's exactly what we're aiming for.
that's absolutely
That's
fantastic. So
absolutely.
that's okay. Right then, chaps.
If
It's
anybody
been
wants to know any more about that, then grab me at a game or whatever, or talk to me. We're in that lovely southwest corner. I'm normally eating some curry down by the bottom or whatever. Whatever's our food of choice.
normally eating
So,
curry. Once you've eaten curry, Noel. It's
oh
only
mate,
been
it
there
was
once.
great though,
Not
wasn't it?
normally eating curry. Once you've eaten
No,
curry
well, I'm just I'm
at the
making
ground. I
it
mean,
and
like
I'm
you
making
do
it.
eat curry. You do eat curry other times, not at the
I
ground.
do
So
eat curry.
don't try and find Noel when he's eating curry at any time. Find him at the ground.
I admit, I would find it quite odd if you kind of ran into my local curry house and said, "Look, Niall, we've tracked you down. This is the only time legitimately I can speak to you is when you're eating curry in your local curry house," which I've got to admit, my local
Ginger and
curry house,
spice on Chiselhurst High Street. Right,
which I
anyhow,
have to say,
guys.
by the way, has deteriorated. It's nowhere near as good as it used to
No,
be.
it's got a oh, we had
So
it recently. It's good. Anyhow, right. So,
Mountain Dew, I think, probably is the one now. I might have to go there because the kids love
no,
Mountain Dew.
it's really pants. We'll go on to a curry debate another time. Anyhow, ginger spice is the winner. Right. As usual, like a couple of weeks ago, I think Ray Armfield, he has a Kent Womble has a brilliant description of the game today. So it's and I'm going to add in a name to his list. Timothy Spall, the Dave Clark Five, Eddie Izzard, Susanna Reid, Roger De Quincey, Nookie Bear, and Nigel Farage. Your boys got one hell of a beating. It was Wimbledon 3, Crystal Palace 1, under 21s. Fantastic. It's never boring being with us, being a Wimbledon fan. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win